Welcome. This is the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast with host Rob Giannino, where we have great conversation with really awesome experts from within the fly fishing community. You see, the fly fishing lifestyle is a journey, and we're glad you're on this journey with us. Check out flyfishingjourneys.com for more podcasts, and please subscribe on your favorite podcast player. Here's your host, Rob Giannino.
After talking with Cheryl Bastian of Swains Cay Lodge for several years at the fly fishing shows, I personally needed to see why they call Andros Island and the Bahamas the bone fishing capital of the world. Let me tell you, my week at Mangrove Key and the area where Swains is located did not disappoint. For both size and numbers, it's tough to beat Andros Island and the Bahamas. Where many people will go down and fish every day, I did things a little differently this time. In 6 days, I spent 2 days bone fishing, 2 days scuba diving, 1 day spear fishing, and 1 day just relaxing at the beach on the property. While many of my trips are go, 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 fish every day, morning till night, this trip, a little different approach, was the perfect way to enjoy the week and everything Andros and the Bahamas has to offer. Maybe on the next trip to Andros, I will fish more, but it's also enjoyable to snorkel, scuba dive, spearfish, and just relax. The Bahamas is truly that getaway your body and soul yearns for and needs every once in a while. The food, the accommodations, and the people of Andros and Swains Cay are amazing. In just a short time, you feel like one of the family. Stay tuned to get fully dialed in on an amazing Bahamian bone fishing podcast. I do want to thank our sponsors, Cross Current Insurance, Norvice, and The Fly Fishing Show. You'll be hearing from them just a little later in the pod. I want to congratulate all the winners from the Fly Fishing Show Consumer Choice Awards. With over 40 categories, visitors from the fly fishing shows and consumers online voted for their favorite products, and the winners were just announced. For a full list of winning products, check out flyfishingjourneys.com under News or in the search bar for Consumer Choice Award winners. All right, guys, welcome to another edition of the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast. I'm your podcaster, Rob Giannino, and we are excited to be on location here in Andros Island in the Bahamas. Excited to have two incredible guests, both Cheryl Bastian, Captain Marvin Miller. Thanks for being on the podcast, guys.
It's great to be here, Rob. Yep. Thank you so much for coming to be with us.
Thank you, Rob, for having us. It's a pleasure to sit here and have a chat about our fishing and national industry.
Yeah, it's been a blast. And, you know, so many people come up and they ask us about bone fishing. You know, where can we find some phenomenal bone fishing? You know, Fly Fishing Journeys is kind of all over the world. We've done some Iceland, some Greenland, out west, a little bit of salt stuff, some permit. But when they talk about bone fishing, they talk about Andros Island. And so I said, hey, let's come down. And I know Cheryl and I have been talking at the fly fishing shows, and we wanted to give our listeners and our viewers on our vlog an explanation and a viewer and a concept of what fly fishing for bonefish is all about. So if you're going to do that, where better than to do it in Andros Island? So, Cheryl, you're the owner of here, Swains Cay, the hospitality and just the service and the quality of the establishment and the location, which is what I want to talk to you about, why you picked this location. But Swains Cay is phenomenal right here on Andros Island in the Bahamas. Tell our listeners a little bit about the Bahamas as an island and how Andros fits into that.
Yes, Andros is actually the largest island in the Bahamas, fifth largest in the Caribbean of, you know, 26 major islands in the Bahamas. It's just phenomenal, the layout, the geological position of Andros. It's called a big yard in terms of population in the Bahamas. You know, it's literally under 800 persons. But it's such a fantastic island, very little development, but the fly fishing industry is certainly its main industry, and we want to develop that greatly. We sit, for those who might not know where we are in the Bahamas, we're one of the most western islands near Cuba.
Okay.
And it's been really a great source for the Bahamas of fresh water, and as I mentioned to you, the fishing. So here at Swains, you know, I had a 33-year career in financial services and private banking, you know, executive. And I came here on a vacation and saw this spot on the eastern side of Andros, less than a mile off the tongue of the ocean, third largest barrier reef, which Andros sits on. Third largest barrier reef. Fantastic location. And what was great about it after we decided to purchase it was that we're between two phenomenal flats, or rather bites, the South Bight and the Middle North Bight. And so with Andras, the number of the hundreds of creeks and inlets, the fantastic floras and faunas, it's why it's the bonefish capital of the world, because the bonefish obviously love that environment. Mm-hmm. And so that's when the idea came. You're in a perfect position to set up a bonefish lodge. And it has served us well. It's just fantastic.
How long have you been here, the proprietor of Swain's Cay here on Andros Island, Cheryl?
We opened February 2009, and we've been operating for 14 years. And, you know, at first it was so slow, creeping, crawling, getting into this market, you know, a big industry worldwide. But we knew that we had a perfect spot and we wanted to get going. And so it struggled at first. But after 14 years, it's really moving along. People are knowing the name Swain's Cay Lodge.
I love that.
And that is primarily because, you know, we try to do it right. Not only we have the best guides you can find anywhere in the world with great crafts. And as I mentioned to you, how wondrous Andras is. It's such a delight for many of those outdoor advocates and fly fishing and fishing.
Yeah.
But the great fishing, the food, the accommodation is great. So
yeah,
that together is a perfect mix.
Yeah. Captain Marvin and I went out a few days ago, my first day fly fishing down here in Andros. We had an amazing time. What is a bite? I think I heard that term, you know, Cheryl was mentioning to me when I was preparing for the trip. Some people may not be familiar with the term bite. So can you explain what a bite is here in Bahamas?
Well, here in the Bahamas, when we use the phrase or paraphrase bite, it's simply a waterway that cuts through the island, kind of a canal that gives you access from one side of the island to the other side. In terms of going from east side to west side, you can actually cut straight through the island and access the west side of the island.
Yeah, so when you're looking at the Bahamas as a whole, or at least Andros, there's these giant, like you say, rivers or canals or what you call here, bites that go from the east to the west side. And then they have, like Cheryl was saying, all these little inlets and islands, and that's where the bonefish love to hang out, like we found out the other day, right?
Yes, sir.
I want to talk a little bit, Captain Marvin, about how somebody can prepare, what they can do as far as preparations for a trip here to Andros Island and a trip for bone fishing. So let's start with like the rods. What size rods would be best served here in the Bahamas?
Specifically for bone fishing here in the Bahamas, Andros Island in particular, you want to travel with an 8-weight rod specifically for bonefish, which is ideal for mild wind condition. And also, you can travel with a 7-weight if you have really, really flat condition, which is not as heavy. And for the windier days, you can actually travel with a 9-weight rod, which is perfect for heavier winds.
Okay, so if I show up and I have an 8 and 9, I'm going to be in good shape.
Perfect.
Yep. And then as far as reels, what would be the top quality in a reel to be sure that your reel performs and does what?
Well, in terms of reels, you want to select a reel that has been tried and tested. And that would be a brand like Able, Nautilus, Hatch, or some Orvis Mark 4 or Mark 5 reels.
Or my Cheeky.
Your Cheeky.
You know how much I love my Cheekies.
Right.
But you just want to idea what you're getting to here is you have to have a high-performing drag.
Right.
Tell the listeners what happens after you hook up with a bonefish.
Listen, man, when you hook a bonefish, anything over 6 pounds, it's going to be like a runaway train with no brakes for the first few seconds before it slows down.
They got to go.
With that said, you need a really good reel and drag system that can stand the test of time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for those listeners who like, you know, they hear that sound of that reel screaming. You know, everyone loves that sound of that reel screaming. Really, a bonefish is probably one of the top target species if you love that sound of that reel. What are some of your guests talked about as far as the bone fishing here, and Cheryl, when they come in? You have guests who come in specifically to target bonefish here in Andros Island. What are some of their takeaways?
Sure. Most of them come in for the bonefish, although they want a variety. Sometimes, you know, they're looking for a tarpon and a permit.
Okay.
As well. The reason why Marvin said, some, you know, always pack that larger rod on the boat when you're going in case you see a larger fish.
Right.
But yeah, when they come here, they're like, you know, so excited the first day to get it started. And then they come and they're out there with these great guides and they're into these big school of fish with big bones and they're totally excited. I mean, the thrill, like you said, of that, you know, the sound of that line running out in the bonefish fighting. You know, he's a mighty fighter, the ghost, they call him. But
the
he's that small fish is like mightier than many, and is very intelligent.
Yep.
So I think they call him the Bula Vallis.
Yeah, Bula Vallis.
What does that mean?
That's the scientific name.
The Bula Vallis.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Vallis.
So, yeah, it's something we're finding and going to the shows, Rob. Saltwater fly fishing is really on the move. And you can understand why, as I mentioned to you, with the guests coming in, the excitement of the day, and no matter what size, having just caught after a great fight, I'm catching that bonefish. So it's a great thrill. It's really worth it.
What I have experienced is a lot of times going to other tropical destinations is you'll have your target species. It may be a tarpon, or target species, it may be a permit or a snook. And sometimes there's bonefish around and they become a little bit more of a secondary fish.
Yeah.
Whereas like a permit can be super difficult to catch, but maybe these bonefish are a little smaller and are a little easier to catch. Or you go to a destination that might be designed for bone fishing, but they're super spooky and you might get a few shots a day. And you'd be lucky if you hook up with one or two.
That's great.
I think when you come to Andros, and it wasn't, and I should have expected it, because you always say Andros Island, the bonefish capital of the world. I wasn't expecting the volume of fish that we saw, and in schools. And they're grabby. I mean, I'm not saying it's easy, because it's not easy by any stretch of the imagination, but it's at least you know if you can make a proper cast, you can put that fly out in front of that bonefish. And if they're in the school and you do the right stripping, if you listen to your guide and you strip, strip, stop, they're going to be grabby. So I think that's one thing that I'm seeing with the bonefish down here is the high volume of fish, and they will take a fly. What is your experience with that, Captain Marvin?
Yes, we have a very good population of bonefish. And as long as you can make a good presentation to those fish, 9 times out of 10, you're probably going to hook up. So it's all about being able to make the proper presentation.
What type of boat are you fishing in so people can get an understanding of moving around?
At present, I'm fishing 2009 Hell's Bay, which has a draft of 6 inches dry weight. And that boat is capable of getting into waters that is about 5 inches if it's balanced correctly.
Right.
And that's where you find most of your tail and bonefish, really shallow.
And then how do you work a flat? I mean, I know we come around, a lot of times it just looks like shoreline to me, you know, because but you're on the east side, you're in the middle of the bite, you're on the west side, and you're just polling these shorelines.
Yes.
From a tide perspective, what's in your mind when you're doing that, Marvin?
Well, to simplify it, you always want to work on a flat or shoreline that has moving water. And because of wind conditions, you always want to work on the protected shore. So that simply means the wind blowing across the shoreline, you want to work on the lee shore. And that gives you an ability to have better visibility and less effect on your cast. And so your casting could be much more productive.
Yeah, that's what I saw. I mean, you were very determined to make sure we were working the right tide, the right location. You're always looking up to see what the clouds are doing because you need that sun to push through that water so we can see the fish.
Correct.
Now, fortunately for us, and even if the lighting wasn't perfect, we saw such large schools of bonefish. You might see, how many did we see with the large, like 10, 12 more?
Like for about 4 hours on the outgoing tide, we had schools of 15 to 20 bonefish every 10 to 15 minutes coming down the shoreline. And sometimes it was kind of cloudy, so we relied on the bow wake. They call it bow wake or moving water, or some people call it nervous water. And that's how we were able to determine where those fish would be and know exactly where to put the fly.
Yeah, yeah. So we were doing good, and I was catching some fish, and maybe I make a bad cast, and I didn't catch a fish out of a I didn't catch a fish out of a group. And maybe my guy might have got a little mad at me because we have to catch a fish out of every group. Let's not miss a group. I said, what, are we at a quota here? What's this?
No, you can count on Marvin to push you.
He
wants you to have not only an enjoyable day that you come back saying you saw and caught fish.
Yeah.
So, you know,
it was
good to have a guy that cares.
So, when we were out there on the boat, I tell Rob, I said, we were like the U.S. military. We only take the best.
Oh, yeah.
And at the end of the day, when you leave Swain's Ski Lodge, we want you to be a better fisherman. We want you to improve on your game. So that's what we're all about. That's our mandate.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of fun. We had a lot of laughs and we caught a lot of fish. And I noticed in the afternoon, you know, we caught some fish and, you know, maybe I missed a few, but he was encouraging me in the afternoon. I said, what did you do with Marvin at lunch or something? He go find Marvin.
In the morning he's the teacher. In the afternoon he's...
Yeah.
Well, you know,
tell him why, Marvin.
After being a fly fishing guide for some 26 years, every guide that you come across, they're going to be pretty intense in the morning because they want to make sure that, you know, you have a good experience and you catch some fish, because the morning the flats are cooler and the fish are more active. So later in the afternoon when it heats up a bit, the fishing slows down a bit. So that's why most guides would be kind of intense during the morning hours of the day to make sure that they get you on fish.
Yeah. So you catch all, you know, catch a bulk of your fish in the morning, knowing the afternoon might be a little windier, might be a little warmer.
Yeah, conditions change.
Yeah, the tides might be as not as ideal. So
right.
You catch a nice group of fish in the morning, have your lunch, and catch a nice group
right.
of fish.
Right, and being the creature that we are, after you eat lunch, your mood tend to
yes.
change.
Get
you tend to get a little more relaxed. So we like to make hay while sunshine early in the morning.
Well, I'll tell you, that hay was shining, and that sun was shining, and we were making a lot of hay because I've never seen anything like it. I mean, just wave after wave of bonefish coming down. And I enjoy catching fish out of the schools, but I was telling Marvin here, sometimes we'd see that one or two working right next to the shore. And that's what I love, is that hunt. Because I was telling him, as a trout fisherman, I'm a headhunter. So I love going dry fly fishing, and I love seeing that rising fish, and I love having that target, and I love that interaction of the dry fly. And for me, it's that one or two bonefish that are kind of working ashore.
Right.
They're up ahead. You kind of pull us up into position, and you make that presentation, and it's such skinny water, and you don't even have to be great at seeing fish. I mean, they're just so visible. You make a few strips, and then you get that reaction of that bite and see that fish take off.
Correct.
That's like the ultimate for me.
Yeah, usually in the mornings, once clients board the boat, all of our guides would have a short chat before we actually put the hammer down to actually go out to the flat. Mm-hmm. And we would tend to brainstorm the client as to what they like to do in terms of their fishing wish, whether they want to do some wade fishing, whether they want to hunt schools, whether they want to hunt singles, or they just want to target big fish. So you have to size up your angler early in the morning and try to tailor the day as to meet their needs.
Yeah, I like that too.
Great
because
plan.
Yeah, that's what he asked me. What are you interested in? First thing he asked me when I got in the boat, are you interested in bonefish, permit, tarpon? You know, what do you like to do? And I said, no, I'd love to catch some tarpon, but we're down here for bonefish, so let's go bonefish hunting. And so that's what he did. And so even though we had a phenomenal day, we were a little bit limited too, because we did have some tough light conditions that day.
Yes.
And so we kind of had to chase some holes in the clouds, if you will.
Yes. When as every fishing guide, when they go out on the flat, it's always kind of, to simplify it, it's a balancing act between tides, light conditions, and wind.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to select the flat that would meet the needs of your specific customer at that time, or your specific angler, because many different anglers have many different casting abilities. So you have to select a flat where you have good light, mild wind conditions, and moving water.
Yeah, and we ended up with, you know, over a dozen, I think it was like 14, 15 fish. Probably would have hit 20 plus if I didn't lose as many as I did. I lost a few, came unbuttoned. And so let's talk about that for a second, Marvin, because when you do hook up with that bonefish and he takes off, let's talk about the line, because I know I lost at least two just by being a little bit tight on my left hand when that line was going through.
Yes, when stripping to make contact with the fish, the first thing you want to do is make sure that your fly line is properly managed on the deck. And once you would have made contact with the fish, you always want to start with a nice, long, slow strip to get the fish attention. And once that fish gets aggressive on the fly, you want to shorten the strip. You want to speed up the strip. And once you would have made contact with that fish, you want to keep that rod tongue down until you feel solid pressure. And once you feel that fish is solidly buttoned onto the fly, then you want to gradually bring your rod tip up, at the same time taking note of the fly line that's on the deck of the boat. Line management is key, and a lot of anglers struggle with that, because if the line is not properly managed, it's going to get caught on the reel or the butt of the rod, or you're going to get it caught around your leg. So keeping that line clear after hookup is key.
Yeah, and the big mistake I made on these two occasions was like almost holding the line, you know, and then he was going away and I held the line and he just came unbuttoned, and then you laughed at me.
Yeah, let's talk about that. let's talk about that, Rob. So when you hook up a bonefish, that bonefish is going to take off. He's going to go from 0 to 60 in a few seconds.
Yeah.
So you don't want to hold that line tight enough to break the fish off. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to hold it tight enough to burn your fingers. Right. And you also don't want to let it go all of a sudden. So it's you just using your finger as a small break-in mechanism to control the line so it goes out smoothly. And once you get it on the reel, then it's game on. The game is not on until the fly all of the fly line is pulling against the reel.
Yeah, so what happened in this one is we caught a nice bonefish out of a school, and we got out of the boat because we wanted to take like a picture of, you know, from the sand rather than from the boat and do a nice hand release for the video and then just make a nice moment. And, you know, nice moments can last just but a moment because Captain Marvin has got his eyes glued down the shoreline. He's like, come on, man, we got another school going. You got a couple seconds here. We got another school coming in. And so now I just cast from, you know, from the sand. I mean, we got all straight nowhere real quick, and now I'm not even in the boat, but I'm not fishing from the flat. We basically hooked up almost instantaneously, and there was so much going on. I held the line, and boom, the fish takes off. He holds the camera. I mean, there's Rob without a fly. Guess what's coming down the shoreline? Another school of bonefish. And so he went up right up close to the school of bonefish with the camera and said, see this school of bonefish? There's Rob with no fly. So this is the day that we have to deal with out in the boat with Captain Marvin. So,
yeah, well, you know, most guides would tell you we're not out there for a long time. We're out there for a good time. So exactly. They want to make every shot count and make sure that you have the best experience anywhere in the world.
Before we jump back into the podcast, here's a short word from one of our fantastic sponsors. Are you a guide, a lodge, or a product manufacturer in the fly fishing or outdoor industry? I want to introduce you to and highlight Cross Current Insurance. Their entire team are great people and experts in their field. They have a guide insurance program that is amazing and very affordable. If you are a lodge or retailer, they also have programs tailored to your needs. These guys fish and are in the outdoors, so they know the industry and the landscape. To get more information on a program that's perfect for you, find them at crosscurrentinsurance.com.
Well, I want to come back to you, Marvin, because we want to continue our lesson here on how to prepare for a bonefish trip here in Andros.
Yes.
I want to pop it back over to Cheryl because we're seated, as you mentioned, right here between those bites, Cheryl. So when you found this property, was it an actual working kind of a hotel and lodge, or what did it look like when you found it?
It was just a bushy property, lots of bush and weed with
that
some amazing coconut trees. Look like they've been around for 500 years. They were so tall, you know, 30 feet up. You know, I love the way they were formed and everything. But unfortunately, with customer safety, we had to cut them down. And it was a great but a difficult journey for me. My desire to make it happen as a Bahamian, when, you know, if you look around our country, mostly foreigners own quite a lot of the hotels that are, you know, worthy, I would call it.
Right.
And so it was a dream of mine to just get this done as a Bahamian and accomplish it, make sure the system worked for me. And I also wanted it to be very nice. And that's why you see the, you know, the now what we have, you know, can accommodate some 24 anglers on the property, but really spaced out and everything. So it was a lot of work, a lot of challenges, finding finance, everyone saying, give up, it wasn't worth it, don't do it. Everything was against me, but I was determined, no, I'm a fighter, I'm going to do it. You know, God's with me and I'm going to get this done despite all the odds. And that's what I did. And I can tell you, it was really warm to know how well received here. You know, the community, the Bahamian, they were happy that a Bahamian was getting something of this size done. And that's been our success, how they've worked with us. As I mentioned, you are amazing guides, the staff. I mean, I can count the success of this lodge, not only on, you know, my drive, my positiveness, but the guides, the great guides we have, the wonderful staff who was so hungry to work. But in addition, you know, really skilled people who want, there's something they say about Andros and the workers here. They really make people feel wanted. Mm. They make people, you know, appreciate it.
Yeah.
And that's what we exude to our guests when they come here. They go away hugging and kissing.
Yeah.
And one of the success of the lodge is client retention, the number of persons who are coming back year after year, who are telling persons, to the point where, you know, I had a big international organization who I wouldn't think would recognize us came to invite us to be a part of them. And so I'm really, really proud of that today.
Yeah, that's what I've noticed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, is that like everyone you go out with, whether it be a guide or a staff, or maybe I'm going diving or we're going spearfishing, like the people that you connect with, it's like you're instantaneously friends and you've never met before and you just have a wonderful day.
And you see how real they are?
Yeah, it's very
nice. That is good.
So there was no buildings when you bought
it? No, no
you
buildings.
You built all this.
Bought it with, there was one building, one of the conditions of the seller. It was an old, dilapidated building. And so what we did was we didn't knock the structure down. We just continued to renovate it. I mean, it was only just, you know, cement, mortar, and put up. And so we built the other, what is it, four buildings. So we have five buildings. We
this
have
dining hall and
yeah,
all the lodging.
A really big restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And kitchen. And then we have two units with three cabins. Nice, spacious, with queen beds and a full bathroom, a porch. And then we're right on the water on a beautiful sandy beach.
The white
and then
sandy
the two-story
beach.
Building that we met here that we, you know, renovated very nicely. Has an amazing three-bedroom apartment with two baths, living room. And that is throughout the season, usually, you know, people just request that well in advance. A 360-degree decking.
Yeah.
And so they love that building. Yeah. And it's spacious. You see the heart, my landscaper, Noel, he puts the love into this yard. And so you feel very comfortable here.
Yeah. It's perfectly situated with these dozen or so palm trees right along the ocean. And you can sit there in your lounge chair and you can pretend that you never have to go back to work again. It's amazing. And you can have yourself a pina colada or you can read a book.
It's very hard for me working.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Looking out at that. But I'm happy that my guests are enjoying it. That brings me some joy.
Yeah. As far as like if you want a tropical getaway and a view in the sunrise and even on the sunset on the other side, it's spectacular. It's bar none. It's spectacular.
And what's another thing to mention is that we're right in the flats.
Yeah.
And you sit here and see the bones pass by daily. You know, we're right sitting on a beautiful flat. Great bones passing by, great diving with blue holes and snorkeling.
And if I may add to what Cheryl has just said, a client looking to do a bone fishing trip might ask, why choose Swain's Key over another lodge? Well, we can tell you and we can boast that Swain's Key is centrally located between the Middle Bight and the South Bight. Well, the Middle Bight intersects into the North Bight and the South Bight. So no matter the wind conditions, you could either fish the Middle Bight or you could fish the South Bight. So you're always sheltered, which is a great advantage over many other lodges around the Bahamas.
Not only that, the proximity to the west side is faster.
Yes.
It's easier than any other
it's
location.
It's 35 minutes over to the west side. Centrally located.
Let's talk a bit. We're going to get back into that list that we need to prepare for, especially when we're talking about leaders, tippets, and flies. But before we do that, Marvin, can you talk a bit about the size of the bonefish here in Andros, maybe some other fish around the world?
Well, in terms of size, we have some of the best bonefish size we see in the world because the average size bonefish here on the island is between 3 and 5 pounds.
Yep.
And you can get a bonefish up to 16 pounds because me personally, I've seen 16-pound bonefish out there in my 26 years as a fishing guide.
That's amazing. And that's what we caught most of the day was the 3 to 5. And specifically, I mentioned, you know, can you specifically target bigger fish? And you had said that where we're fishing, this is going to be like I think I lost one. You said it was about 6 or 7. But if you want to target those big, big bonefish, there's different spots you have to go.
Yes.
And just the lighting wasn't right for that day with the way the cloud cover
was. Right. If you're going to target big bonefish, you want to target like creek mouths, small island keys that has water moving around them. And you also need good sunlight. So you got to kind of tailor and pick your data when you want to target big bonefish.
And if you're targeting big bonefish, I'm sure you're not seeing 16, you know, all the time. But like, if you're targeting big bonefish, what would be the average in the bigger size fish?
About the average in the bigger size fish you're going to see is between 6 and 10 pounds.
And that's not like uncommon. That happens regularly around here.
On a daily basis.
Just look at the pictures on the wall here.
Well, all the lodges have the pictures on the wall.
No, these are real. I mean,
they're always real. But I mean, here they're regular. I mean, that's the key. This is not uncommon on the wall.
No, that's not uncommon.
I had to needle you a little bit.
No, that's okay.
That wall behind you tells a story.
Yes, it does.
And they say a picture is worth a million words.
Well, that's because your giant permit is on the wall there, Barbara. Let's just say that. Your giant permit. And there's not a lot of permit around, but there are some permit, right?
Yes, we can find them if we specifically target permit on a daily basis. It's just knowing the right tides. And in order to catch a permit, you got to think like a permit. So you don't want to tailor the right conditions to find that fish.
And they're tricky.
Very.
So it's, yeah, I like to stick to the bonefish here. You said you can find some tarpon around here as well.
Yes, correct.
All right, so let's get back to our list. So as far as leaders and tippets, what do I need to be prepared for?
Well, here on Andros Island, most every guide would tell you to select a leader between 10 and 16 pounds for bonefish.
Okay. Do you like the tapered one long tape, or do you like building your leader with knots?
Depends on the angler casting ability. I would choose whether a tapered leader or a constructed leader. And what we find is the constructed leader tends to turn over better. So for someone who's just learning how to cast or new to the game, I would recommend the constructed leader.
Okay. But a seasoned professional?
Tapered leader.
Why go tapered with a seasoned professional over constructed?
Because their casting ability would be a lot more advanced than somebody that is just learning how to cast. And with a constructed leader, it just turns over better.
Okay. So basically, when we're talking about like a constructed leader, we're talking about a leader that you put together. You have like a 60-pound, a 40-pound, a 30-pound. You have all the tippet leader material in,
yes,
in its own little spool.
Right.
And then you kind of decide, I need 2 feet of 60, 2 feet of 40,
right,
you know, and then you break it all the way down.
Yeah, it's kind of like stepping down. You start at 30 pounds, you
right,
drop to 20, you go to 16, and you end at about 10 pounds. So you would have like 2 feet of each different
right,
weight leader.
Yeah, and then that's you just put it together with
yeah,
your
with
blood
either
knots,
a blood knot or a surgeon's knot.
So, because I know some of the top anglers in the world that I'm, you know, associated with, they always use knotted leaders.
Yes, a lot of anglers, they prefer to use just constructed leaders over the tapered leaders.
Yeah, because they can kind of fine-tune that leader as they need,
yeah,
rather
they
than just have one long
tailor it
to start all over.
Yeah, taper
mm-hmm,
it to what they need.
Mm-hmm. Because I put down to 12. We were fishing with 12.
Yes.
And then you moved me to 15. We won't say
16.
Why. Though.
15.
We're not going to tell everybody why. We're not going to tell everyone why. We didn't lose any fish after that. I can tell you that for sure.
Well, our motto is go big or go home.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so we've got our leader. We have our tippet. And, you know, you can get, you know, tapered or constructed.
Yes.
You can use pink. You know, this is pink tropical or
yeah,
clear.
Yeah, fluorocarbon or monofilament leader. But the fish here are not really leader shy. And I am happy to say that we haven't had that amount of fishing pressure where we have to worry about a
yeah,
specific type of leader.
Yeah, we didn't see anybody.
No.
Any other boats that day?
No.
Which was pretty awesome.
Only place in the world where you could have a square mile to yourself.
That's mm-hmm, awesome.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got the rod, the reel, the leader, the tippet. Let's talk about flies. How should somebody be prepared for flies when they come here to Andros? Because I brought a lot of bonefish flies, but there was just a handful of them that were ideal for this condition. And then once we broke those off, we kind of went into yours because mm-hmm, you needed to have this specific fly. What are some of the specifics to the fly that maybe mine were maybe too small, or those gotchas that I had were just too light, or what were you thinking?
Depending on the conditions of the flat, whether it's water depth or wind conditions, you want to select a type of fly that is specifically works on that flat. But here, most of our bonefish are eating crustaceans, whether it be crabs or shrimp or clams or snails from the mangrove root. On the red mangrove, there's a snail that lives on there, and that's why the bonefish kind of go in there at high water so they can eat those snails off the mangrove. But when fishing on a specific flat, you want to look at the bottom and the terrain of the flat and try to select something that is pretty close to that terrain. So, but that said, you don't want to use a bright color fly on a white bottom. That's unnatural.
That's
so
why.
You want to try to work as close to nature as possible.
Mm-hmm. I see. So some of those gotchas and Crazy Charlies that I had were maybe pink, and that pink wouldn't be ideal for this situation.
Right. They were probably too bright for the bottom. So mm-hmm, on a darker mm-hmm, bottom, you use a darker fly. On a lighter bottom, you want to use a lighter fly. Try to blend mm-hmm, with nature.
So basically what you're saying is the patterns are okay. So the gotchas, the Crazy Charlies. And
yes. And the mantis and the clausus and all that stuff, they all work.
But you're not. It's more important on the size, the weight, and the color.
Right.
And so around here is a lot of like earth tones, right? Like the
yes,
tans.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You seem to want to go for those tans a lot.
Correct.
And a little bigger than I was thinking, too.
Because yeah,
I was up in like the 6 and 8s, and you were like down in the 2s.
Yeah, mostly here we fish size 4. fours and size twos. And on windy days, we fish a weighted fly with a barbell that gets on quick, and it's easier to throw in the wind. So the wind doesn't move it a whole lot. Once it hits the water, it goes right down.
Sink rates are important.
Yes, sink rates is very important.
Especially when you're talking about like how deep you're fishing.
Correct.
So twos and fours in the tans and like the gotchas are okay?
Yes.
Crazy Charlies?
Yes. Clausers. And you have the EP brush shrimp, and we have the mantis shrimp that works just as well.
Yeah, we fished that shrimp pattern all afternoon, and it was great.
Yes.
Which I like fishing shrimp, too. I mean, I love fishing, like, the gotchas and stuff. That's super fun. And but if you get to a bigger fly, like a shrimp like that, and you see them taking that... And that's a lot of fun.
Stripping patterns is also important when fishing for a bonefish. Would have made that cast and that fly sinks. You don't want to start with a quick strip on that fly because that's going to startle the fish or spook the fish.
Yep.
Normally out there in the flat, a shrimp or a crab would be going along with his normal business, going very, very slowly doing his thing. Mm-hmm. And when he gets in trouble, what's he going to do? He's going to speed up. So you always start that strip with a long, slow strip to get the fish attention. And once you realize that the fish has logged onto the flies per se, then you want to shorten the strip and speed it up as he becomes aggressive on the fly. And sometimes if you're running out of real estate, being the distance between the boat and the fish, you want to slow that fly down or you want to take a pause in between so the fish catch up to the fly. Because if the fish realize he can't catch the fly, he's going to lose focus and lose interest. Mm. So you got to engage that fish and watch his behavior and also always keep him interested in the fly.
We're going to take a short commercial break to hear from Tim O'Neill of Norvice.
What makes the Norvice different than another system?
There are a lot of rotary fly tying vices out there. The Norvice is the only vice that will truly spin when you tie flies, and there's a big difference between rotating a vice slowly and spinning it at a bit of a faster RPM. And being able to spin the hook on a zero axis rotations opens up a lot of doors for us in the world of fly tying.
Tell me about the introduction of colors to the Norvice system.
When we obtained the company from Norm, he said to me just a very, very short statement. He said, you know, I always thought a colored Norvice would be a cool item. We brought out five colors: Radical Red, Sunset Orange, Shamrock Green, Liberty Blue, and Royal Purple. We have five colors along with the black that you're accustomed to seeing with Norvice, and we've been doing very well with those.
To find more information and their online store, visit nor-vice.com.
We're going to get back to this whole stripping pattern thing because it kind of reminds me of a specific song that I remember. So we're coming back to the stripping patterns. Before we do that, Cheryl, can you tell our listeners how you get to Andros? So maybe if I have some listeners in California or the Midwest or Colorado or Boston, New York, even through Florida or the Mid-Atlantic, what's the easiest way to get here to Andros?
To Andros, Mangrove Key.
In particular.
Yes. We've been working in the Ministry of Tourism for quite a while with many airlines to get, and the flights are increasing. I mean, from California, I would say try to get over to the East Coast, you know, direct into Florida, North Carolina, Atlanta. They all have daily flights into Nassau, as well as connections into Miami that can get you here. Typically, our visitors from California or Denver, they would not get in time to catch that first to get into Andros for our daily 2 and 3 o'clock jumper that we have with two flights from Nassau as well as Fort Lauderdale. Through Maker's Air and Tropical Airways. So they usually would come over on the East Coast a day ahead, sleep over, and then they would come the following day and be able to catch the jumper flight. 15 minutes out of Nassau, out of Fort Lauderdale, about an hour. And there are a number of, like I said, Maker's Air, Tropical Airways, direct into Congo Town, as well as you can get a number of charters. And we have two daily flights into Mangrove Key out of Nassau. The good thing is we can actually offer Swains Key Lodge. Have air offers that are year-round, where it's a booking date and a travel date, where we can provide you with $250 on your room if you fly out of Maker's Air Tropical out of Fort Lauderdale, or if you're direct from Fort Lauderdale, $250.
Okay.
As well as two fly free out of Nassau. So you can fly into Nassau and get 7 nights stay with us. You get two free tickets per room. 4 nights or less, then you get one free ticket per room. And that's all done in advance by email with confirmation.
That's phenomenal because I didn't realize you could go direct from Fort Lauderdale. I came in just because I get here all in one day. Mm-hmm. I came from Boston to actually Fort Lauderdale to Nassau, and then I took the jumper from there.
Okay.
Which is that tropical Eagle Air. It's like a 15-minute. They're a fun little ride. You know, you sure. get to see some great sights along the way and look at that beautiful blue water and get excited. As far as like preparations here, what would be some of those final preparations we'd want to think about as far as outfitting yourself, Marvin, as far as like glasses, buffs? Should I wear sunscreen or should I just kind of buff up and kind of be fully protected from the sun?
Well, in terms of fishing attire, for a day out on the flats, you want to start with your head cover, which is your hat. You want to start with your sunglasses, be it Coasters or Smith. You want to, depends on the conditions, you want to travel with two pairs of sunglasses, be a copper lens for a brighter sunny day, an amber lens for a cloudy day. And then you want to have your buff and you want to have long sleeve shirts that covers your arms, and you want to have your long pants to protect your legs from the sun and the bugs, and you want to have your socks, a nice thick pair of socks, and wading shoes also, and deck shoes for the boat. But most guides would recommend that you fish just wearing socks. And the reason why you fish just wearing socks if you're fishing from the boat is so that when you step on the fly line, you can feel it. If you're wearing footwear on the boat and you step on the fly line, you won't be able to feel it, and you go to cast at the fish and the line doesn't go. Mm-hmm. So that's the recommendation for wearing sock on the boat.
I see. So you can bring your flats boat on, your flats boots on the boat, but yes. don't wear them until you're ready to go walk a flat.
Correct.
And is there a percentage of your time where you're kind of poling versus wading a flat with your feet?
During most of the time, like if you have extremely windy conditions and you want the customer prefers to wade fish, that's when we would actually go on the flat. Or if you have low light and heavy winds, then you want to fish really, really skinny. And the reason why you're fishing skinny, because the light is limited and you'll be able to see the fish real better in a really skinny water.
Cheryl, before we close, and I'm going to pop over to Captain Marvin for one last time, because he mentioned this to me about this stripping pattern. I want to get some clarification on the stripping pattern, because there may be like a jingle that you can kind of put in your back of your mind to remember your stripping pattern. But before we close and get over to the jingle, what would be some of the comments that you hear about the folks who come down here to Andros and Mangrove Key and Swains for the first time, specifically regarding the fishing and the bonefish?
Concerning the fishing?
Yeah.
Most people are usually very pleased. The novices, the new, they're encouraged. Because, you know, as I said, the guides are very helpful. If you can hear from Marvin, they're very knowledgeable about about their industry and their art. And they like most of our guides. And so, you know, even if they don't catch a lot of fish on the first time, they found it exciting. They found the guides super class. And they usually enjoy the wonderful, beautiful aquamarine environment of our waters. The clear waters, the just the whole natural adventurous, the sea life. Mm-hmm. What they would have seen, the different types of fish, the crabs, the lobsters you can pick up. And so, yeah, they enjoy just being out there. Some anglers actually say, you know, I didn't even have to catch a fish. Just being out there in the boat in this beautiful country, these beautiful waters was just enough for me for the trip. Yeah.
And if I may add to that, every single guide will walk you through the process of connecting with a fish step by step. Mm-hmm. They would build you from the foundation all the way to the top.
Yep. And we didn't talk about, Charles, some of the other activities you can do besides fly fishing here when you come down to Andros, and maybe even use me as an example. We've had a crazy week this week. It's been amazing.
Rob, I was like, wow, you love diving. You say, now don't worry about it. I love fishing. But the opportunity, you know, Andros, sitting on the third largest barrier reef, tongue of the ocean, fantastic diving, you know, lots of fish species.
Snorkeling.
To go in and dive. We have a dive operation, not on the property, but in South Andros, we have a great journey going on the ferry there.
Yeah.
And you can actually see a bit of South Andros as well. As you know, this is the archipelago, and we're an archipelago within an archipelago in the Bahamas. So yes, not only diving, there's snorkeling. You can bring the family. I mean, our teenagers and youngsters love being out there as well in the beautiful waters. You know, we have biking, we have a kayaking, and sitting on the flats, you can fish right here and train, as well as a number of local, not too many local events happen here, but some of them where they meet the, you know, our residents, and they enjoy that. Like you said, the people, that's one of our greatest assets, meeting the people.
And the spearfishing, too. You can go spearfishing and go spearfishing
as well. Rob brought us dinner. Hey, Marvin, a ton of lobster, and he brought a grouper. And they had a feast. You should see the pictures of how well my cook, Pam, she is phenomenal. Yeah. Everybody, they clap her up just about every evening. Yeah. Our cooking here is just cuisine in Andrews as a whole. But I can tell you at Swain Ski Lodge, it's one of the best. Might not be the fanciest with all of this, but you know, the plates are clean, the desserts are great, you know, with coconut tart right off our tree.
It's the real Bahamian deal. If you want the real Bahamian deal, come down to Swain Ski.
Yes,
Swain Ski Lodge. This is the place.
And you forgot to mention the Blue Hole.
Oh, my goodness.
Blue Holes.
Bahamas has the most Blue Holes in the world, and Andrews has the most Blue Holes in the Bahamas. And you can see there again the flora and the fauna and the fish. And, you know, it's just wonderful. It's an awe to see this big hole in the ocean, and you can dive in it and have such a wonderful time.
Even the inland Blue Holes also.
We're developing some more tours. I had the opportunity to go back there. I mean, a beautiful Blue Hole, you know, over near the western side. You know, it's about an hour walk, but we're going to develop it and make it a great day that you can do other things with some of the sightseeing here.
Well, as I told you, Cheryl, I came with my logbook and some of my new dive equipment, and I had, when I got certified in 2008 till this day, I have 5 logged dives. I've doubled that this week. Nice. I had 5 dives this week alone, so I'm up to 10 dives.
No, I'm so happy for you to have had that experience.
Yeah, and these Blue Holes, I dove into them, and I didn't think I was going to. And the first one was nice because it was big and round, and it was big and round, and we kind of went down into it. I'm like, wow, this is cool. And the second one with this little crack, and we were 85, me and the dive master were 85 feet down into this Blue Hole crack, and there was 2 giant stone crabs having a battle with one another 85 feet below the surface. In this, he had to have a light because it was dark down there. And he had the light on him, and they just froze because they were in the middle of this battle. And it's kind of like, imagine you and your brother in this giant fight, and then mom comes out, and you're just frozen. You're like ready to punch each other. And that's what these 2 crabs were doing. They were facing off with each other, and as soon as you put the light on, they froze. And then we just left them alone, and then we went back to the top. But to have
it's exciting.
We were even going to do one of these inland Blue Holes. We didn't have time, but that you walk inland and you dive down into the Blue Hole on the land, and it's the ocean water, and you can dive down in there like 100 feet. I never thought I'd be doing any of this crazy stuff like that. But
so you got to come back.
Andros is
spread the news and come back.
It's just filled with adventure travel and adventurous days. And you come back and you have this beautiful white sand beach with these palm trees and a pina colada. And then you spent the day fly fishing, catching bonefish, or you went snorkeling, or you went diving. You may have even seen a shark. Who knows what could happen?
Or wrestled one. Caught one.
Or wrestled a shark. But before we close, guys, and first of all, thank you for being on the podcast. But before we close, Captain Marvin mentioned this idea of getting the rhythm of your strip down, right?
Okay.
And we even practiced that. You know, he says, Rob, here's how I want you to do it. I want you to do it like strip, strip, stop. We're doing the boat. So how does this go? Tell us a little bit about this bonefish bop here, Marvin.
Well, it was just something we came up with on the boat, and it simply walks you through how to strip set a bonefish step by step. And it pretty much goes something like this. It goes strip, strip, stop. We're doing the bonefish bop. It's good to the last drop. Once you get a taste, you just can't stop. Cast, cast, cast. Hurry up quick before the fish swim past. If you miss the shot, the moment won't last. We like big bones and they cannot lie, especially the ones that eat our fly. When we hook up, it makes you feel so high. I hold the rod tip high to the sky. Sometimes they fight so strong, they make you wear a frown. Sometimes you cast, they let you down, make you look like a clown. Rip, stop. We're doing the bonefish bop. It's good to the last drop. Once you get a taste, you just can't stop.
Yeah. I love it.
That's marvelous.
I love it. Marvelous Marvin. Thank you so much.
Good stuff, man. Good to have you, Rob.
It's been great to have you guys. Thank you for all the hospitality and just showing me your beautiful island.
No, you're most welcome. We're proud of it.
It's been a pleasure.
We want to share it with more of the world.
Absolutely. Yes, come on down. Yes. Swain Ski, the price is right.
Oh, yes.
With your host, Ms. Cheryl Bastel.
Oh, yes. And Marvelous Marvin as your guide. And many others.
Thank you, guys.
No, thank you, Rob. Enjoy the rest of your trip.
You've been listening to Fly Fishing Journeys with your host, Rob Giannino. To be notified of new episodes, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Podcasts. You can follow us on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. For past episodes, check out flyfishingjourneys.com. Fly fishing is a journey, and we're glad you're on this journey with us.